At 1:30, it's partly cloudy and 8 degrees in Edmonton. You're listening to CBC Radio 1, 740 in Edmonton. Good afternoon, I'm Don Bell. Here's an update from the CBC Edmonton Newsroom. A fatality inquiry into the death of an Edmonton man got underway this morning. The inquiry heard John Peter Pavick was shot 4 times by Constable Ken Brander in 2001. Pavick had a blood alcohol count of 0.30. The inquiry is scheduled to continue for the rest of the week. A Toronto man convicted in 1992 of killing his girlfriend is appealing his case in a Toronto courtroom today. Robert Baltovich spent 8 years in jail for killing Elizabeth Bain, a murder he swears he didn't commit. A judge has granted him bail while he appeals. Part of the appeal is expected to rest on suggestions that Paul Bernardo may have been involved in Bain's disappearance. A website posting claims that an Iraqi militant group has beheaded one of the American hostages in Iraq. But the claim is not verified yet. The short statement says the leader has beheaded the first American, and others will follow. 2 Americans and a Briton are being held. I'll have a complete newscast at 2 o'clock. In the weather, a mix of sun and cloud today in Edmonton, a high of 10. It's partly cloudy and 8 right now in the capital city. Clear tonight with a low of 2, and there's a risk of frost. Tomorrow mainly sunny and a high of 19.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Wild Rose Forum on CBC Radio 1. My name is Don Hill. My guest, Ron Coleman, GPI Atlantic. That's the Genuine Progress Indicator. And if you'd like to find out about how you can use the GPI in your community for your business, how to talk to a politician, I don't know if it'll get you a date, but certainly it's a very valuable piece of information and a tool that will give you a different take on the world around you and accounting for the wealth of our nation, our province, and your community. So here's the website address, www.gpiatlantic.org. I'll repeat that, www.gpiatlantic.org. As I mentioned, my guest is Ron Coleman. Ron, we were getting a wonderful call from Lyle in Red Deer, who was speaking about how he can apply the GPI with questions that he could take to his local politicians. You wanted to add something to that conversation.
Yes, I think Lyle's question was right on the mark because it raises the issue of what's the connection between all of this and policy in the political arena. That's really a critical question. And really the short answer to that is that things which are not counted are not properly valued. And if they're not properly valued, they just don't get policy attention. So one example of that, before the break, we were talking about some of the things that we do count in our economic growth statistics that are really questionable. More crime, more pollution, war, all of that makes the economy grow. But we're also missing some critical things. We pay no attention to the value of volunteer work, for example,
yes,
which really does contribute enormously to our well-being, simply because no money's exchanged. So,
and the work of individuals in the family unit, which are not valued either.
Exactly. Unpaid household work counts for nothing in our conventional measures of progress, even though it makes it, you could argue, it's the underpinning of our economic health.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada, we've seen in the last 10 years a 12% decline in volunteer work across the country. That's an enormous loss, and it means a loss in services provided to the elderly, the sick, the disabled, youth in need, but that's never been debated in any legislature in the country. It's a non-issue. It's not a blip on the radar screen of policymakers.
Well, that's not entirely true, and let me just underline this, that I agree with the thrust of what you're saying, but I just want to add this one dimension. Where there's disagreement is that what you're speaking to is absolutely correct, is that people are not volunteering because of a number of factors, inclusive of the threat of litigation.
Yep.
And that's where the discussion comes from, is ought the lawyer's butt out?
Well, that's, I mean, you're right that there are many challenges that the volunteer sector is facing that are new, and one of them is the whole legal side of volunteering that you know, has made that life in that sector much more difficult than it used to be. But the issue is that that issue should be being discussed because the voluntary sector is having difficulties. But because it's not measured, because it's not accounted for, it's simply ignored. So, I mean, those kinds of issues, what are the challenges facing the voluntary sector? What accounts for the decline in voluntary work? They should be major factors in our policy discussions, but when we don't count something and we don't measure it, it doesn't have value. It's as if I were to tell my students at university, this is a really important term paper and it's worth 2% of your final grade. Then whatever speech I give about the importance of the term paper, they're going to ignore what I say because
of the number of evaluation.
It doesn't have value.
Yeah. We have a whole whack of people who want to speak with you, Ron Coleman. He's my guest from GPI Atlantic. We're talking about the genuine progress indicator. The question, is there a better way to account for wealth? Is there a better way, perhaps, to account for Alberta's good fortune? And let's now go to Cochrane and Hines. Welcome to Wild Rose Forum.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm not going to talk about beef, by the way. But I wanted to tell Ron, you know, that I found out about the genuine progress indicator when I came back after working in Bhutan for some time. And
Bhutan, of course, in Southeast Asia, in Asia, right?
Yeah, east of Nepal, sandwiched between Tibet and India. And the king there, they were not happy with the conventional or the Western method of measuring progress and development, and they came up with gross national happiness. That's their concept. And it's a much more appealing term than GPIs, but it's the same idea because it stands on four legs. One of them is economic development. You need that. But the second one is human development, that is education and enlightenment. I mean, this is a Buddhist country.
Yes.
They talk about community and institutional development. That would include good government, a very important aspect. And then the last one is the environment, environmental preservation, environmental protection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked extremely well for the country. They have a bit of a hard time with the quantitative measuring of it. They're working on that. But as a concept, it works well, it's appealing, and even Westerners coming there like myself, I was absolutely amazed when I came back looking in Canada and I found the GPI, the Atlantic one. But I also wanted to mention there are Alberta GPIs. I think Mark Anielski had worked on that, and the Pembina Institute, I think, had that.
Pembina Institute is particularly a fan of this. You know,
right.
I'm so pleased that you called, Hines, because you actually bring up a superb point with regards to Buddhist economics. And Ron Coleman, I think you take some of your inspiration, I won't say all of it, from Fritz Schumacher, who wrote, for those of you who remember, Small is Beautiful, but in his other life as an economist, and this is just in the years between the prosperity of the 60s and the post-war years and the Marshall Plan, etc., he was endowed by, I think it was the World Bank at the time, was it, Ron, to go to Asia and investigate Buddhist countries to help them, was it to get a leg up in the world economy? And he went off there and he investigated them, and they said, well, what can they learn from us? And he said, well, they have nothing to learn from us. We have plenty to learn from them.
Right.
And Ron Coleman, is this what you're describing as a kind of Buddhist economics? And forget about religion for a minute.
That was a very interesting remark that Hines made there. In fact, coincidentally, I was just in Bhutan in February of this year because they had their first international conference on the topic of operationalizing gross national happiness, and they did want some assistance from some folk in the West on indicators and measures. But this has been, you know, really core part of their policy now for more than 30 years. In fact, as Hines said, their king said in 1972, gross national happiness is more important to Bhutan than gross national product. So they've really understood that true development consists of these larger issues, and economic development is a part of it. But you're quite right. There's definitely a movement there that's been very, very long-standing to measure progress in this way. And you're also right, in Alberta, the Pembina Institute has done work on the GPI for Alberta, and it actually showed some very interesting things for Alberta. It showed that even though income has generally improved, and people are living longer, and the debt, of course, now is paid off. But nevertheless, there are invisible costs. The Alberta GPI that Mark Anielski and the Pembina Institute put together showed that divorce rates have skyrocketed, suicide rates are high, the forests are becoming fragmented, crime is up, and the gap between rich and poor is growing. So that's all from the Alberta GPI work. And so this is actually becoming more and more, I think, of a national and international movement. And you're quite right that the Buddhist economics is very much in attune with this kind of way of looking at things.
Well, let me just amplify that a bit more, and we'll get right back to Hines, is that the Buddhist economics just recognizes a complete interdependence, that nothing exists in isolation, and that what's really important is to make sure that the conditions are always there for a person to have a good life.
Exactly.
And that's it has nothing to do with religion per se, but I guess everything to do with a philosophy of mind. But back to you, Hines, for another comment
just
or question.
Very quick. I like the idea of the happiness, and some of the earlier callers said also it's all about our happiness and our overall well-being. So the term just fits so much better. And I also like the other caller. I think it was Lyle. And I think it's a great idea to start up from the local government levels and get our local governments, where we have more input, more say, there's no party politics, to get them to start measuring, you know, and more striving in those, you know, to achieve or to make progress on some of those GPIs. I think that's a good start.
It's a great idea. You're right. Yeah.
That's the way to start, I think, anyway.
Hines, thanks very much for your call from Cochrane. I have some interesting news for you, because as you were speaking, it turns out already on the phone tree is Mark Inletsky from the Pembina Institute is online. So we'll get to his call next. Thanks very much, Hines. That's Hines and Cochrane. This is Wild Rose Forum on CBC Radio 1. Yes, I have some email. I'll get to that in just a few moments. But I think what we should do is go right to Mark Inletsky, who called in of his own volition. Welcome to Wild Rose Forum. Mark, hi.
Hi, it's Mark Inletsky. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Mark.
I just thought a friend said Ron's on the talk and show and talking about GPI, and I thought I'd say hello and just give a plug for, in fact, I just mentioned our Alberta GPI project that we did a couple of years ago, and I'm just encouraged that you've got Ron on the show and talking about this really important issue, particularly in the context of, as Alberta and Saskatchewan celebrate their centennials, I think it's really important to take stock of the progress we've made in 100 years. And one thing I've encouraged Paul Martin to think about is a new balance sheet for the nation, so that we begin to measure the things that really make life worthwhile for us as Canadians. And as we look to the next 100 years of progress, we set up a series of new balance sheet for this province, for this country, that are tied explicitly to the values we hold as Canadians.
Mark, let me ask you a couple of questions, because you're at the ground level. You know how this works. You've used it as an economic tool, a way to evaluate and to project, and also, well, counsel politicians and business people. What's their response been to this in Alberta?
Well, the response actually from business people is quite refreshing, of course. I speak, you know, the conventional language of accounting.
Yes.
That any good business manager knows what he's got or she's got in their inventory on their you know, the asset side, and they know their liabilities. And to be an effective business person, you need to manage those assets efficiently and effectively. So it really appeals to that audience, and of course it appeals to a number of other audiences, including environmentalists or those in the social work, that understand issues like social capital. So it really appeals to a broad audience, because it just makes, as Ron said earlier, it just makes sense.
Let me ask a technical question, but at the same time it's one that we're all deeply familiar with, is the idea of externalities, is that what happens on the street, for instance, outside of your building is not your problem, that it's an externality and it ought not be accounted for.
Well, I think My comment there, having been involved in the Alberta government's measuring
system, and that's what they tend to do,
is to, let's be honest with each other that we have a shared responsibility for the collective stewardship of our natural and social human capital.
But, Mark, let me just be very clear on this, is that the model that we've used in this province is that, like I just described, that if there's some problem out in the street, that's their problem, not you in the building, even though the street life will affect your life.
That's correct. And I think what Ron and I are trying to say is that if we have an honest balance sheet, if we have these indicators, then there's an opportunity for us to look at a common picture of ourselves and try to take some shared responsibility for that collective well-being. And I think that's the important thing I would challenge politicians to think about as we hopefully mature in our democracy, that we find a way of understanding and sharing this responsibility for these externalities and for all the good things that are going on.
All right, so having said all that, go ahead, Ron Coleman.
If I can throw one thing in there,
yes,
I think that this is a very important point, and I want to reinforce what Mark is saying. I think that business folk can understand this very, very well. First, from two points of view. One is